everybody loves a night out, whether it's seeing your favorite band in person or maybe being there in the crowd to cheer on your favorite team. Well, with the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, you can go to the concert or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order.
When you play a Monday Night Football game so poorly, the only thing people notice is a dude stirring Gatorade with cups.
Yuck.
We have a panelist from Washington, D.C. here. We have to do a wellness check on Mr. Clinton Yates. How's it going, Clinton? Look at this team.
Hashtag
look at your team.
FTTR. That's how it's going.
F? Oh, fail?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. And the cup stirs the drink. Maryland. College Park.
Here it is, the most perfect. Are they really any good, or are they just so trash, compacted, bad? The laws of physics don't apply here. I don't know. Congratulations to all parties involved. Clinton, this is your steaming pile. They got bad quarterback play, maybe because they have bad offensive line play. They got bad defensive play, maybe because they have bad defense. Maybe they have coaching issues, a front office issue, an ownership issue. But none of that explains or excuses one, spelling London Fletcher's name wrong for his Ring of Honor ceremony, or B, stirring Gatorade with cups. What do you have to say for yourself, Clinton Yates?
You know, the scary part about this is that this is really standard operating procedure in Ashburnistan. Nobody is surprised by any of this. Blowout loss in front of a nobody crowd at home during a primetime game. You got a player in a quarterback in Case Keenum who's diving, making a ridiculous play where he doesn't understand the rules in a moment. And it was a bad choice of play anyway. And you've got Josh Norman getting burned on a situation that ends up coming back on a replay as a result of him getting beat in a touchdown. Listen, that's the whole issue with this franchise is that everything can go wrong and will go wrong. And the decisions they do make end up coming back on them because they don't know how to even make the bad decisions they're trying to execute. Everything last night showed everything this franchise is about and why they're so bad and arguably the worst franchise
in
the league.
So, I mean, you're reveling in the fact that they have arrived at laughing stock. That's what I'm hearing.
I mean, that's what the nature of the entertainment is at this point, frankly. It is rooting for a team to do poorly because the owner is such a jerk and the guy who runs the team
all right,
is
all right.
So
we don't need to get the name calling here, okay? We don't have to do that. I mean, let's not even bring up names. Kim Kalisher, how about you?
You know, I think one thing we have to acknowledge is that Washington does not have a home field advantage. They're now 2-17 at FedEx Field on Monday Night Football. Last night was a Bears crowd. I was there a week before that. It was a Cowboys crowd. People hate their stadium, not quite as much as their owner, but they don't like much about it. But the team itself, I still thought, even with the injuries, and yeah, they've had a bunch, they have enough of those defensive players, they'd be pretty good defensively. They haven't held anybody under 30 yet this season. They're terrible defensively, and especially in the secondary. And then you get to the offense, and about the only thing I can say is that if you throw it within 4 feet above Terry McLaurin's head, he'll catch it. When it's 6 feet over his head, like some of Case Keenum's throws, he can't get it. But 4 feet, he'll go get it.
Okay. I think you gave him too much credit, too. They're 1-17 on Monday night at home. Don't schedule that anymore. Just get them off the schedule.
Ever.
Bill Plaschke, let's take a broader look at this team right now, okay? They got a first-round pick at quarterback. Last night you saw Case Keenum. He struggled. Should they have gone to Haskins last night? What comes first, a quarterback change or a coaching change? Answer any question you like.
Yeah, I'm stunned Clinton didn't say this, and I'm on the other side of the country looking at this from a distance. Why is the head coach still there? He's 37-49. The guy's not a winner. They're not playing for him. He's a nice coordinator. Why is that coach still there? And why isn't Haskins the quarterback? Why is Case Keenum still there? Oh, everybody's waiting for Colt McCoy? Colt McCoy, are you kidding me? Put Haskins in there now. Did Daniel Jones teach us nothing about giving a chance to inject some life into a team, for Pete's sake? So clear.
Daniel Jones teaches nothing.
I
love the way you say that, Flashkey. Frank Isola, you have a view of this?
You know, Booger McFarland during the telecast did bring up a coaching change a number of times. I think right now the biggest thing that really all that is left with this season is a change at quarterback, and it's coming soon. You know, they do play the Giants this week, and everybody thought that the Giants would draft Haskins. Instead, they took Jones. I'm waiting, though. They do play the Patriots in a couple of weeks. Let them get past that. Then they play Miami. Dwayne Haskins is eventually going to play. That's all that's left for this season, because to Clinton's point, this was an organization that had a tradition of winning. Now since 99, two seasons with at least 10 wins. All they do now is lose. It's an organization going nowhere.
Glenn Yates, you want to address the Dwayne Haskins of it all?
Yeah, the point that's instructive here is not Daniel Jones. The point that's instructive here is RG3 and Shanahan. That internal power structure that often exists between the coach and the owner and the guy who runs the team is something that takes over the front office all the time. We've already seen Gruden have issues
with
who he wants to play and why.
And why do they always seem to be pulling in different directions?
Well, remember when Bruce Allen ordered that Scott McLuhan couldn't be in the locker room? It's because certain people want to be in charge, and they don't want the people who actually are in charge of the plays to do this. And this is what I'm saying, is that as a result of that, you've got a situation where Haskins isn't being developed at the way that he should be. There's a lot of players on this team who don't like the fact that he's only taking scout team reps. He's not with the second team, so he's just not prepared. That's, of course,
so you think there's no way you would play him against New York this upcoming week on a short week when he's not getting scouted?
I'm not saying there's no way. I'm saying the reason why you want Colts is because you don't think Haskins is actually prepared. Wait for the Dolphins week.
I hear you, Plashkey, that you would, but what Clinton just told us was he's just on the scout team in practice. He's not even getting the reps to throw him out now in a short week when he's not getting the
reps. He had to start in the exhibition season. He started games. He played all the exhibition games. Put him in there.
And Kalishaw, last word?
Yeah, I don't understand what they're doing with Haskins, and I couldn't believe what Gruden said today about Keenum still learning the offense. He needs more time. To do what? What if he becomes good? Is Keenum their quarterback next year, too? You're going to just keep
asking. Well, the fact was, Keenum wasn't so bad in the first week of the season or the second week of the season, but he was dreadful last night. And now we have to talk about the team on the other side of the field. Were they who we thought they were? Finally, the Bears in their offense. You did good, but nobody can believe you because it came against Clinton's steaming pile. That's their deal right now. On Trubisky. He was being picked apart by the Monday night crew, even while he was going 20 of 23 in the first half and throwing those three first half touchdowns. Tim, do you think Chicago saw enough to make any potential concerns they had about Trubisky subside?
Oh, I wouldn't make them all go away because, again, we're talking about the level of competition they're playing last night. And I hate to do this, but they had two touchdown drives of more than 12 yards. You know, they had a defensive touchdown, and they had a real short field, 11 yards. Now, they moved the ball well at times, and he looked pretty good. And he looks good on the move, but that's still an offense that doesn't look like it has any consistency. And it's not all his fault, but I think he's still a work in
progress. Plashkey, how'd you see Trubisky last night?
The guy was 10 of 11 on third down. He was 7 for 9 on the run, the most completions on the run by any passer in the NFL this season. Give him a break. I mean, he had a short field. He didn't need to do much, but he did what he had to do. He needed this game desperately to reestablish himself as a quarterback, and I think he did.
Right, Gasola?
And he was 20 of 23 in the first half. I thought he played really well. It does seem like he gets judged a little harsher than some other guys. Tony, remember, last year in the playoffs, he put them in position when a home playoff game against the Eagles. That wasn't him taking the kick. So he did march his team down the field. And I think with that defense and him at quarterback, the games, when you get to November, December in Chicago, they have a team that could surprise a lot of people in the NFC. Maybe it's not going to be New Orleans.
I want to get back to what you said, though, at the start, though. You think people judge him too harsh? What does that mean?
Well, I also think where he was drafted, and we've seen Lamar Jackson, who has played really well, but also lost a home playoff game, and Lamar Jackson has come sprinting out this season while the Bears have struggled. Remember, last night was the first time they've scored more than 20 points in their last three games, and that includes that playoff game, so I get it, but I do think we're still dealing with a young quarterback.
And Clint Yates?
I'll applaud the Bears here because they came out and said openly, we want him to get a good stat line from a confidence standpoint just so that this kid can remember that he's actually pretty good. They achieved that goal. Look, you blew out a bad team. That's what you're supposed to do when they're a good team. It happened. Mission accomplished.
All right. Mission accomplished. We'll move on. There's a growing sentiment around many in the NBA that Kevin Durant could be back this season. That was a tweet from Brian Lewis, New York Post. And all of a sudden, a dearth of Durant coming back this season stories came out. Then CEO David Livy told the Post, when you start thinking about the Kevin Durant comeback story and filming that,
just opportunities.
Stop.
So all that talk, and now GM Sean Marks with the statement for the team that they won't plan on playing him this year, expect him to miss the season. But Frank, how do you hear all of it?
Sean Marks met with the media right across the river just, you know, today, this afternoon, and basically said that he's going to be out for the year. Let's remember something. The year changes on January 1st. And once you start getting into March and April, and I think Kevin Durant, being the competitor that he is, I think we're going to see a repeat of last year like we saw during the playoffs, where people were thinking, Kevin Durant, can you come back? Can you help us? And I think Kevin Durant, I think there's going to come a point in March where he'll be back out on the court playing.
Do you think it benefits the Nets to leave it a little bit open like you just seem to think they did? Or you think they should shut it down right now completely, Frank?
I know, because I think it's going to come down to two people. His doctor, who also happens to be the Nets doctor, he performed the surgery, and Kevin Durant. I think those two decide that Kevin Durant is okay to go out and play. He's going to go out and play, but not January, not February, but probably March.
Glenn Yates?
Yeah, but it should come down to one person, and that person should be Kevin Durant. Look, the past, once again, is instructive here. I hated the way that everybody looked at every single move he made, and this was my concern with him going to Brooklyn with this injury, is that he was going to get mined for team content, as they said, which is apparently more valuable than him being able to get back as a basketball player. I don't love this story as a fan of the league. I don't need to know this much. I want Kevin to tell me when he wants to play, and I'll take it from there. The team, stay out of it, man. This is a little
Tim
weird.
Tim Kalishaw?
Yeah, I'm with Clinton. We know what Durant went through in the playoffs last year. It was like, well, is Kevin going to get back out there or not? Yeah. He's just got a calf strain, and we saw what happened. However, I would say this. I mean, we've seen other players make quicker comebacks. Wes Matthews tore his Achilles in Portland in March, went to Dallas as a free agent and played in the opener in October. That was a little under 8 months. Now, maybe Kevin's injury is different, but 9 months, 10 months, that gets into April, like Frank said, if they're hanging around the playoffs, why wouldn't you put him in once he's ready?
Flashkey?
No, it's going to take a full year. The Nets need to shut him down, to take the pressure off of him, to stop this story in this content, in this little movie right now where it starts. Look what happened to DeMarcus Cousins. Look at Kobe Bryant. These guys try to come back, and other injuries occur. He doesn't need that pressure. He doesn't. And Clinton's right. That was the biggest concern, him going to a new team, him trying to impress everyone. He needs to take it slow. He needs to take it carefully. He needs to take the year off.
Frank, guys, solo after the horn.
Well, let's cut the Nets a little slack here. You know, they're not going to get asked about Spencer Dinwiddie and Joe Harris today when Sean Marks meets with the media. They're going to ask about Kevin Durant, and he said the right thing.
Okay,
he's out, but he's a competitor that
might
want to
play. But when you hear the CEO of the team say, think of all the content opportunities we could have with
that's
him.
Unconscionable.
See, this is the problem we have when we're changing injuries.
He's not the basketball guy. He's not the basketball.
I'm stunned to hear that they might make a similar misstep to what maybe Golden State did last year, rushing him out there. Because they're all these. All the pressures of coming back are still on his shoulders. And as a team, maybe it's their right to say, you know what, we're going to shut you down because we need you to be healthy for the next 5 years of your deal.
I'll give you points for that, Tony. Good argument.
We are going to take a break here. We have a new Nets court to look at. You guys want to check this out? Look at this. What do you think? What do you see? What do you see?
Okay.
Oh, I kind of like that.
Oh, yeah?
Great.
Like cool. Oh, that's a train line. That's cool.
The subway. That's a good job out of you, Clinton. That's a good job. That's exactly what it is. Clinton Yates, the only one to see that. Frank, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeehaw.
Fire cell next.
Frank doesn't take the subway. Frank parks in front of the net.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, brought to you by Chase. Coming to you from the Seaport District at Pier 17.
Lack of institutional control. Dreaded, and also at this point, let's be honest, what does it really mean? Kansas basketball, Bill Self's relationship with Adidas under the spotlight. Self's response, quote, innuendo, half-truths, misimpressions, and mischaracterizations, he says. But he's going to let the next 90 days play out as the school looks into it and responds themselves. Bill, what are you doing with this information?
This is a big deal. Lack of institutional control is a huge buzzword, and the institution here is Bill Self. There's a lot of smoke, and the FBI was involved in this. The NCAA is going to make an example of somebody in this. They're going to make an example of a blue blood program. This could be the one. Kansas is in trouble.
Well, what are we talking about then, Bill? Are we talking about a 9-game suspension, or like Jim Boeheim had recently, or a postseason ban?
I think if this FBI, if they look at the FBI evidence, this could be it for Bill Self. I'm serious. This is bad. This is big news.
Tim Kalishaw?
I think it's big. You know, I understand Bill Self being defiant, and you know, he knows what went on. But usually in the NCAA, you're fighting your word against somebody. It's not somebody's phone records who was a you know, Adidas bag man, and, you know, he got summoned by the FBI. This is completely different. So the stuff they have Bill Self saying, it looks awfully scary for Kansas.
Glenn Yates.
Yeah, and to be clear, the lack of institutional control comes because there's a football thing in there as well, which is a whole other story for Kansas. But, I mean, the thing is that this FBI bit that we all thought was just blustering and grandstanding has actually shown something. You don't get all this information unless people are under oath. This isn't your standard operating NCAA investigation. I've got to believe that on some level this is work if you care about this.
Frank Isola.
In the last 5 years, two Hall of Fame coaches fell under the lack of head coach control. Jim Boeheim, Larry Brown, both got 9 games, and then Syracuse imposed their own ban in the postseason. I think Bill Self, that's why I think it'll be a 9-game suspension. He'll be back for conference play in January.
Oh, it's going to be worse. The FBI's involved, Frank.
Fire Sale 2, how you read Houston quarterback senior Derek King redshirting this year, which has started 1-3 for Houston, and coming back and playing next year for Houston again. Gives me the best chance to develop, King said. We didn't want a wasted year, King's father told ESPN. King's father also said his son was, quote, not real comfortable, end quote, with all of it, but it's the decision they made. Tim, this is a pro prospect and a new redshirt rule in college. How do you consider it?
You know, it's a strange story because the kid's saying one thing and the dad seems to be saying another. I think there's a great chance he's played his last game at Houston and he'll play another season for a Power 5 team, possibly one just across the Red River, which seems to be really good at getting transfer quarterbacks and turning them into Heisman winners. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you think this means he could leave Houston, even though all reports are saying that he's going to come back next year. Clint Yates, how about you?
Dad's not saying that.
More generally, I like this move because it's another situation where players are taking their own power into their own hands. You can say, look, I'm not going to do this. I might go. I might stay. And for how schools control guys and every single thing they can do, I like this. Even if it turns out they're sort of confused, ultimately it'll help us develop.
Frank Isola?
We talk so much about colleges using players as an example of the player trying to beat the system. And I don't see anything wrong with it whatsoever. So good for him if he does it. And I'll tell you what, that Tulane loss that they had last Thursday, that basically changed their entire season. When Tulane came back from more than 21 down, won the game, now they're 1-3. Now you see
Bill Plaschke?
I agree with everybody. The player is finally taking control, using the rules to their advantage. The Houston receiver is doing the same thing. And it's almost like, for once, the players are saying, you know what, we're gonna buy into this tanking thing. If we're not going to be any good this year, we'll come back and play next year. And, Tim, I don't see any evidence that he's going to transfer. I think they both come back to Houston.
Tim seems to think that his father and the comments he made or didn't make left the door open.
Sounds like it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Lincoln Riley praised him after a game.
We'll move on. Buy or sell 3, baseball all up in their bag. And those bags are slippery. Chris Bryant going down Sunday night. We've seen this before. Player agents are upset. Scott Boras is upset. Clinton, does baseball have a bag problem?
Not exactly. And Scott Boras bringing a cannon to a fist fight. I mean, look, this has happened to two guys. There's a couple of different things here. Everybody runs on the same bag. Just because this guy slipped on one is not exactly a huge issue. And secondarily, if you lunge at the end of your run to first, you're running bases incorrectly. Sorry. I mean, it's unfortunate, but like, that's the deal. That's just how you run.
This is an agent looking out for two high-profile clients. I get it. But think about how many guys run through the bag and don't get hurt. It happens in every sport. Bad ice, bad field, bad court. Guys slip. It happens. It doesn't mean you change.
Bill Plaschke?
Yeah, Scott Boras is off base here. See what I did there? Because the bases are raised.
That
just killed me for the show. But the bases are raised. It's going to be a problem every time. That's the way baseball is. Get used to it.
See what I did here, Bill? Tim Kalish, how about you?
Bill, we saw it. We heard it. We want it to go away. Chris Bryant gets hurt. But how many guys hit the first base bag in that game? You know, how many guys ran right
exactly
through and continued to play? It's just not an epidemic.
Lastly, you were already in a bad position today because you didn't wear the same shirt that Kalishaw, Yates, and Isola did. All right, you missed the mark right there. And then, I mean, we just can't have Kalishaw and Isola because they are wearing literally the same shirt. So Isola's going the wrong way, and we'll have a Tim Kalishaw, Clint Yates showdown in 2 minutes.
As we should.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
No, my man just started throwing babies out the window.
Wow.
We was catching them. Unlike Aguilar.
Oh, man. Days later, it's still so good. And the outcome of this even better now that Nelson Aguilar has offered that man, the Good Samaritan, tickets. Here is a tweet from the Atlantic Kansas City about Patrick Mahomes already having basically a third of the career statistically of Troy Aikman in just over a season. And here's Troy Aikman's response. In case you missed it, talk to me when he has 33% of my Super Bowl titles. So what we have here, Tim Kalishaw, Clinton Yates, is a high road and a clapback. Who did it better, Aguilar or Aikman? Tim?
I'm going to go with the Aguilar high road. I think Troy was going for humor, but he came with kind of a smirk with that response. He could have said, hey, Mahomes didn't have Emmitt Smith in his backfield. Tried to be a little funnier with it. Mm-hmm.
This is definitely really Aguilar, because the first thing he did was the right thing, which was thank him for what he actually did in the fire. He didn't jump and make it immediately about himself. He said, hey, you're an American hero. Thank you. Come to my show. I'll probably do better. It was an excellent move on every
That's
level.
Incredible. Though, when you read what the Good Samaritan said, you're like, this can't possibly be true. Then you see the video, and he's delivering the line as well as he did. Get him his own show. That's great. We'll split the point. Move on. The distance on this throw for Mookie Betts last night. All right. Outfield assist. 305 feet. Clinton Yates. What's the best part?
I mean, the best part for me, we've seen him throw guys out in this distance in the playoffs before. He banged Tony Kemp. But look at that camera angle. How often would we get a direct shot of a dude nailing a guy from that far deep in left field? It was Scorsese-like. Unbelievable.
He throws it from a goal line to a goal line on a football field. That's just incredible to think about. That's the best part. The unfortunate part is that background, all those empty seats. Tampa Bay, they are in a wild card race. It's a shame people don't know.
Tim, you realize this, of course, because you know me well. This was over the second Clinton Yates invoked Martin Scorsese. Can't wait for the Irishman. All right, Clinton, 30 seconds of FaceTime.
I'd like to give some props to Megan Rapinoe. She won the 2019 FIFA Women's Player of the Year Award, and the speech she gave was dazzling. A lot of people like to get on her because they feel that she's crass or she sort of acts out in moments that she shouldn't necessarily be doing. What she said on that stage was delivered with aplomb and brilliance, something she does a lot. She talked about the LGBT community as far as it relates to soccer, and she empowered everyone in that room to simply do better. Rapinoe, we don't deserve you. You deserve that award, though, and great job on telling everybody why they should be better.
Yates, strong win today for the man.
30 seconds. Use the word applause.
All right, that's going to do it, folks. Here's our Scorsese shot right here. All right, let's pull this one out. Let's go like this.
Deliver my word.
Let's walk into the Copa. And let's hit the camera. Oh.